Well, my best prophecies are fueled by bourbon.
I saw the limitations of text back then, and I thought, assuming this whole story is correct, what kind of a sadistic god or what kind of an idiot god would create this entire thing that we see, all of the universe with all the majesty and, you know, all the magnificent things that there are in the universe, and the secret to the universe, he's going to tell us in text and burn us in hell if we don't get the message correct? Or even worse, trust it to governments.
Right.
This made no sense to me whatsoever. It's like depths of idiocy to believe that.
We all get screwed because of original sin. And if original sin was an analogy for something, then Jesus died for nothing because then there's no original sin. So God creates sin to bring back his own person, then we have to eat him once a week. I mean, here's the thing. You're laughing at this entire time, which is why I'm totally comfortable just going off on this. Because this is just why I'm so confused.
This is the exact thought process I went through.
Okay.
And then
how the hell did he get the Quaker? But if you're a bad person, then you become the Pope.
Yeah.
And then you convince people that it's okay to fuck kids. Like, why keep the religion? That's like me going, I'm a minarchist because I believe that the state, this one part of the Constitution is pretty good. If I cherry pick this just right, I get to keep the state and I get to keep hope and happiness. And I don't have to think that the world is meaningless and that no one can control me in order to have a better life.
Right. I also believe in markets, though.
I thought this was an interrogation.
No, this is fun.
I'm sensing the fun here.
Baby, what's the big deal? Feel what you want to feel. Say what you want to say. You're going to die one day. For example, I could kiss you. Just because I want to. What's the difference if you turn away? I'm gonna die one day. Why do you waste your time thinking about your reputation? Trying to meet an expectation, wondering what they're gonna say. When everyone you ever know sent it for a headstone.
Morales and Ben Stone, and we're just going to be having a bit of a freewheeling discussion about, I guess, our histories, I guess, kind of interviewing each other, and whatever else you guys want to talk about.
The important person here is Mr. Ben Stone. How are you doing today, sir?
Oh, pretty good. I would dispute that. I'm no more important than, you know, but thank you anyway.
So we ended up meeting in Megan's stomping ground, Pensacola, Florida, because God knows in July, the main place I want to be is a place that gets 105 when it's cold. It's really, really nice, but it's good that we all managed to get out in this apartment and do a little bit of recording. So Ben, so this is going to be posted probably on the Libertarian Atheist RSS feed. It turns out a lot of atheists don't listen to people with titles with the word bad Quaker in it. So if you could tell us a bit about kind of what you, I know bad Quaker isn't quite going on anymore, but Freedom Fiend still is. Just a little bit about like your background and how you got started podcasting.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of, I was on the internet with a lot of different names, you know, and different, hiding behind a lot of different names. And I'm not necessarily against that. It was handy at the time. It was, you know, it was better to get stuff out there. So I was doing a lot of commentary on, you know, like a lot of right-wing locations, gun boards and survival boards. And I was doing a lot of Photoshopping and trying to do Liberty memes. This was like 2006, 2005, 2006, up into the buildup of 2008. You know, when Ron Paul changed the world. And I got some advice. I was thinking that I needed to do something else because I was making the same arguments over and over. I was like, every single conversation went back to the very basics, and you're having to replow, you know, the same ground again. And it gets really tiresome that you can never get to step B if you constantly have to talk about step A over and over and over again. And that's what I was doing at survival sites and gun sites and right wing different, you know, because that's where I was focusing my energy. And I kind of fell onto the bad Quaker thing. I had very slowly come around to a Quakerism as a thought process in abandoning what most people would just recognize as theism and moving more towards the skepticism side of the thinking. And that's how I came into Quakerism. But I never felt comfortable as a Quaker because of a lot of the things like the socialism that comes with that and also because of some of the radical theism that's involved in Quakers. And so, the best I could explain myself to people was to say, well, I am a Quaker in many ways, but I'm just not a very good Quaker, you know. And it kind of evolved from there. I was getting advice from people that said, rather than being frustrated that you're having to replow that same ground over and over and over and never getting to step beyond point A, why don't you do something that's not on somebody else's website, something, you know, that's uniquely yours that you can take people through a progression of steps to get them to that thinking that you want. And I thought, yeah, that's almost sounds like brainwashing, but you know, if I'm doing it in the right direction, then who cares? And so that was, we actually had a contest on a survival board to try to name a podcast that I could do that would have a catchy name and that would hook people in, and you know, it would be good on a search engine. This is the kind of stuff we were looking for. And Bad Quaker won in the contest. And I was like, okay. And I had people like drawing logos for me and, sending me catchphrases and stuff like this. And there was a whole discussion on whether the NAP, NAP was a more suited thing than the zero aggression principle, because nobody, this was, by that time it was early 2011, and nobody was using the phrase, almost nobody was using the phrase zero aggression principle. Everybody used NAP. And so we figured out that zero aggression principle would do better with Google. So I said, okay, well, from now on, I will always use zero aggression principle, and I'll put that in all my tags, so that if anybody looks that up after Wikipedia, it's going to come up Bad Quaker. And we were successful at that for a while. But that was the purpose. That was the how that whole branding came about. And then it was just a matter of taking through the steps to be able to say the things that I wanted to say without sounding like a complete kook. Specifically, one of the things that I wanted to publicly say is why people in America who call yourselves Christians and claim all these things like this, why do you believe a book that was authorized by a British king? It's the book that you put all this authority into was literally a government publication. Now just let that roll through your head for a second. Why would you put your faith and teach your children to hold in reverence this piece of paper that essentially the Department of Education produced from, England in the 1600s? It's crazy. But I couldn't just come right out on a gun board, or a right-wing survivalist board and say that stuff in 2010. They would have hunted me down and skinned me alive.
So I like the zero aggression principle. I think the zap sounds cooler than the nap. But I kind of want to back up a bit, if you don't mind. What were you kind of into before you got into liberty activism? What pushed you in that direction? And were you always religious on some level, or did you? How did you come around to Quakerism too?
I was going all the way back into the 70s. I've told the story almost too many times. It gets boring, but going back into the 70s, I was real active in NORML, the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. 78, 79, I was really getting into that, and I was bumping into libertarians in that. I mean, there was a wide scope of people in NORML in California in the late 70s. But I was bumping into these libertarians that were almost getting in the way of the other NORML activities that were going on, NORML being the organization, none of us were NORML, but And so the seeds were planted then. And I already had a really strong anarchist flavor to my thinking because I had always hated authority. My dad had sort of raised me with a general disrespect of authority. He didn't like authority of any kind. I tell this story pretty regularly. He was a self-taught pilot who refused to get a pilot's license because he didn't think that the government had the authority to control the air, you know. So he would refuse to get a pilot's license. So I had this in my background. The only thing with my parents were they were both real hardline Baptists, and I just saw so much hypocrisy in that whole way of thinking that I had a real hard time. I've never been comfortable saying there is no God. I know this is I can't say I know that as a fact, but I can almost say for a fact that whatever it is that they imagine, those Baptists that I was raised around, whatever they imagine can't be correct.
So this guy, way more interesting than I thought it was going to. I didn't know you had an issue with the King James Bible, because I do too. Maybe not for the exact same reasons, but no, I find this interesting though, because you bring up the Baptist thing, you're saying, I can't exactly, holy shit, that is hot. I'm going to turn that down a bit. My goddamn upper mid voice. So you brought up the issues with the King James Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know Aramaic or Greek?
I started learning. I was in a journey of discovery in the early 80s. And I thought, well, you know, I was having a problem with this King James whole idea that the government has an authorized version of the Bible. And so I was trying to learn Hebrew and Latin at the same time, which at the time,
Hebrew isn't easy.
Yeah.
Numbers get involved and it gets real confusing.
Yeah, it was really mind-boggling. And I was failing on both. I was taking theology classes and I was failing at Latin. I was failing at Hebrew. And I just got a Hebrew to English dictionary and a Greek to English dictionary and an exhaustive concordance of the Bible. And I just started going back and double-checking things and almost like translating for myself what was said, and it was clear to me that there was a good portion of the mainline doctrine that's put in the King James Version that's pretty much just made up. It does not fit what's there in Greek or what's there in Hebrew. And the Greek versions are not even, I mean, like you mentioned, Aramaic is what Jesus spoke.
Well, no, I mean, and you're dealing with even, you know, 5th and 6th century, complete reclassifying, changing specific things. And honestly, for me, translation issues were even more proof to me that, you know, if God was this great dude who created the multiverse, he could have figured out some fucking translation things, you know, somewhere along the line so that, you know, 2,000 years later, you're not having to scuttle through trying to figure out which one's the Greek or the Latin one or which one's the true or the false one, especially if at the very end, you go to hell if you don't do it right. So it's like, it's quite a whopper. It's making it really hard.
This makes a really sadistic view of a God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to give you the most.
I'm going to flood you before I even give you the book. I'm gonna flood the world before I even told you what to do. Babies, children, all of you. The dictator doesn't let Moses go and his people go, mm-hmm. So he kills all the dictator's kids and everyone else. And you're like, what the fuck, dude? Just show up with a gat, shoot him in the face. I mean, you're God, right? Like, these are some pretty simple things you could do. I mean, just really simple shit that you could do versus all of these things.
Yeah.
Oh man. And then you got original sin when it comes to agriculture, which is just, it's this weird analogy for agriculture, so we all get screwed because of original sin. And if original sin was an analogy for something, then Jesus died for nothing, because then there's no original sin. So God creates sin to bring back his own person, then we have to eat him once a week. I mean, here's the thing, you're laughing at this entire time, which is why I'm totally comfortable just going off on this, because this is just why I'm so confused.
This is the exact thought process I went through.
Okay.
And then
how the hell did you get the Quaker?
Well, I should mention too, you know, when like posting boards before email, when posting boards were the only thing that the World Wide Web was good for. I saw the limitations of text back then, and I thought, assuming this whole story is correct, what kind of a sadistic God or what kind of an idiot God would create this entire thing that we see, all of the universe with all the majesty and, you know, Quakers and quasars. I got the Quaker on my brain. Quasars and, you know, all the magnificent things that there are in the universe. And the secret to the universe, he's going to tell us in text and burn us in hell if we don't get the message correct.
And give it to illiterates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even worse, trust it to governments.
Right.
This made no sense to me whatsoever. It's like depths of idiocy to believe that. You know, I'm not trying to insult somebody who has spent their whole life believing it. It's just, you know, what kind of levels of generational brainwashing does it take to get to the point of where a person doesn't look at that and go, it can't be possible that whatever created all of this has given us a secret message in text.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. It's almost like, okay, if I'm going to believe that, all right, then yeah, I'll believe that the crop circles are really God talking to us, because it makes just as much sense. You can tell as much off of a crop circle as you can a text message. So sure, okay, tell me everything. I'll believe everything now. Bring in Loch Ness Monster. It's got the Yeti is real. I got to believe in aliens. I got to believe everything. Because if I'm going to believe that the creator of the universe couldn't come up with a better plan than to put riddles in text and to burn me in hell for eternity if I don't get the message, then I must be gullible enough to believe anything.
So what are the main ways that Quakerism differs from other types of Christianity? The limited amount I've looked into it, it almost seems kind of like more of like a New Age version of Christianity or something like that. So what are kind of the main differences between like beliefs about hell and salvation and things like that?
I think the major aspect that you have to keep in mind with Quakerism is that one of the foundational thoughts is that there is no leadership in Quakers. There is no Quaker Pope. There is no Quaker local pastor. There is no Quaker elder or leader or father or priest or anything. One Quaker's view is just as valid as any other, because we're talking about things that can't be proven. So if I think that God is a giant Stave Puff marshmallow man that lives on Venus, then you, as another Quaker, don't have the authority to tell me that I'm nuts, no matter how crazy I might be. So so this allows a couple of oddities. It means that there are Quakers that believe really, really traditional Christian things. And there are Quakers that don't even believe that Jesus ever lived, and don't believe there are atheist Quakers. And that was actually one of the things that
because I got to be honest here. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit confused right now, because you just gave me a hardcore atheist rant about 5 seconds ago. So you're going to have to create these links for me to how to figure out how the hell you can even go under the codification of Christian here. I mean, you're like swimming in like Davy Barker Islam pool, where I'm just like, I don't even know.
Thank you.
I'm just completely confused. Davy's was the biggest anomaly. Right now, you're teetering right there. We're getting close.
Because I've heard this too, that you can be atheist and be a Quaker. So it sounds more of like a system of principles. So Could you explain Quaker atheism to me?
The best I can't actually call myself an atheist, because I think I can say skeptic, and even that offends some skeptics. To call myself a skeptic,
I'm not worried about offending anything. I just want definitions.
I can't say for certain there is or isn't a God. I have hopes. I have hopes that there is some order to all of this, to the universe, not just human life, but I hope that there's some plan or some order to all of this. I like to think that there is. I'm comfortable in thinking that we have some purpose. If we are comfortable, I mean, if there is some purpose to our being, then the things that I do matter, at least in my own personal life and to the life of my immediate generations, you know, my children and their children. So I feel like if none of this matters, I don't necessarily accept what some Christians will complain about atheists, to say, well, if you don't believe in God, you'll just go out and kill everybody.
Yeah.
That's the same argument that they make about
I don't trust those people because they basically, it's the same people. It's like, we'd all be raping each other. It's like, dude, I've raped exactly the amount of people I've wanted to rape my entire life.
Exactly.
Which is zero. Yeah. I murdered the exact amount of people I've wanted to murder, which is zero.
Yeah.
And Christians and statists, I mean, it's almost exact same arguments. It's all Hobbesian.
Right.
It's all coming from original sin, which is why we did the Libertarian Atheist podcast. We're like, hey, look at this shit. It's the exact same arguments on a constant basis.
Yeah.
But, so are you a practical atheist then? I mean, do you think your prayers, when you pray at night to some guy who created the fucking universe, like, we don't matter in comparison to the universe, do you think that does something for you? Like, that's just kind of what I want to know.
For me, what I might consider, what I might call prayer or describe as prayer, really is a lot more like meditation. Yeah. Okay. It's just clearing my mind, trying for a few minutes not to think about anything at all. And if I can make it through a certain period of time of not thinking of anything, then when I do start to think about something, I find it much easier to concentrate on one thing and really clarify my thoughts on that one thing. So that's as close as to prayer as I can get. Because even if I make the assumption that there is some kind of an intelligence with a plan that created us and somehow cares about what we think or say or do.
Or masturbate.
Yeah.
For some reason.
If you think that way, it's like, how do you go through life and not drive yourself crazy thinking that there's these people watching you constantly? You know, it's kind of creepy. Yeah. So the flip side of that is that, I don't want to insult anybody who does pray, but to me, it seems like it's a systematic fooling of yourself and making yourself think that you're more important to the universe than what you ever could possibly be. I mean, how could your thoughts be important to the universe, you know, or whatever there is, whatever magical cloud sitting person you imagine out there, you know? So for me, like I said, I think of prayer more as a meditation, thought clearing. And if I assume that we have a purpose, and that's not necessarily even, this is kind of hard to explain, but if there's a purpose without a central being who had a plan, I don't even know how that makes sense. But if there is a purpose to all this without one central being that had a plan, even then I can't imagine me having an influence on that. So the only thing I can have an influence on is my own sanity, my own day-to-day life, and trying to make life as good as possible for the next generation, my children, their children, so forth like that. And so that's where my responsibility lies. I in a sense, created these people, you know, my children. I brought them into this mess. I have a responsibility to them. Other than that, you know, I don't really, the only responsibility I feel to the universe or to other mankind or the humanity or whatever is the fact that my kids have to tolerate all these people and live among them. So, you know, that's the only reason I do anything to make society better, is because in the short blink of time that I'm going to be here, I can't successfully hide from everybody. I'm going to have to interact with some of them, and my kids are going to have to interact with some of them. So if I can influence things to be a little bit better in the process, then I'll do that. Now, and so what is better in the process? Well, if you boil the message of Jesus down to a simple Quaker way of thinking, which is what is the essence of this, whether Jesus is real or not, whether he was ever an actual person, what is it that we get from the actual teachings of him? And that is essentially, don't be a jerk, leave everybody else alone, don't try to be the boss of anybody, and ignore all the laws that were written earlier. You know, because he said at one point, and I'm doing an exact quote as exact as the King James Version is, which means I'm making it up right now. But but he said, essentially, I'm fulfilling all the old law right now when I'm talking to you and I'm telling you to leave your friends alone, leave your neighbors alone. Don't try to punish people. Don't judge people. Live the best you can. Let them live how they live. And that's a better life. And if you boil down Quakerism to that, I think you've, and whether, even if you don't call it Quakerism, I think you have a better, I hate to use the word philosophy, but just a better path that if we could all agree on. And that's what the zero aggression principle really is. You know, it's a radical Christian, Becky Akers, once told me that the zero aggression principle is like one side of the coin, and the golden rule, Jesus' golden rule, is like the other side of the coin. One is do unto others, and the other is don't do unto others. You know, don't aggress on others. And then the other side of that is, and be good. You know, so that's like the Bill and Ted version of philosophy. Just be excellent to each other, you know.
That's where I derive most of my philosophy from, actually.
Bill and Ted?
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite books, religious and not religious?
You know, I like some of the old, like Screwtape Letters and some of the C.S. Lewis stuff where he's not... Screwtape Letters, because it's weird. I mean, it's just, you know, it's fantastical, and I don't believe anything like that could ever happen. But it's a neat mind game to play, you know. I like fantasy stuff a little bit, so I like some Tolkien stuff. And in C.S. Lewis, I kind of look at him as trying to keep up with his buddy, Tolkien, you know.
Just making it even more Jesus-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was pretty, like, C.S. Lewis, I have the most mixed feelings about, because I use his quotes like hell. I mean, mm-hmm. Road to Hell is paved with good intentions. Yeah. There's nothing worse than like a leader with good intentions, because it will never be met. Therefore, right. They'll continue to be a tyrant.
Right.
Which to me, it's just like, but you're also quoting the Bible in your statements, and God was the biggest tyrant of all in the Old Testament. Like, which is just ridiculously large tyrant. So C.S. Lewis is always that one where I'm just like, I like you, but man, we would not go to the same parties at all. Wouldn't like me much.
He was an atheist and was actually converted to Christianity by Tolkien.
Yeah.
This is going to sound mean, but it kind of makes me think that he was not that strong-willed of a person. And so he kind of became a light version of his friend.
Well, C.S. Lewis, the virtue he called for the most is the one that we do on the show call the worst virtue of all, which is the idea of faith.
Yeah.
And I mean, C.S. Lewis spoke very, very highly of believing in things without of or in spite of reason and evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Luther was similar.
Yeah.
It's weird to me whenever people think Martin Luther was like this like radical, like critical thinking. I was like, no, Martin Luther hated people and thought and reason.
Yeah.
Basically, the Pope wasn't as domineering crazy as he would like. And he's mad that people can't read the true readings of the Old Testament that say, like, no, God kills everyone and you're burning in hell. It has nothing to do with how much money you decide to give to the priest for touching that little kid. You're still going to hell. Which, honestly, if there was a hell, I wish pedophiles would go. That's one of the great sadnesses of there being no God, is that some of these guys, they just get to go.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, though. I do got to ask a question, though, because with the audience that listens to this show, they would get really, really mad at me if I didn't. You stated Jesus's narrative breaks down into the golden rule.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a lot of justification of slavery within the Bible, even by Jesus. He didn't state slavery is wrong. He states this is how you're supposed to hit them.
Yeah.
Not one iota shall be lost of the old law. Now, even if he's contradicting his own words, that doesn't mean that one of the sides of the contradiction is better. It just means he's a contradictory figure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So isn't it a little bit of like, it's kind of like watching Full House. Bob Saget molests one of the little girls at one point, and then we ignore it because he said that really nice thing at the end. It's like, no, Bob's still a molester. He still did some really messed up stuff. I don't think I'm going to find a religion around him. So it's still based off of those old teachings. It's still within the canon of the Old Testament, which is not a guy who libertarians should be looking at and going, that's my dictator.
Well, I look through it a lot in the sense that, like, for instance, I can't prove Jesus existed as a person, as a human being. It's slightly easier to prove that some other historical figures existed You know, we're not talking about Caesar or Alexander the Great. We're talking about people who, during their own time, they wrote nothing. Nothing was physically recorded by them or about them during their time. And it wasn't until maybe 100 years later that people sat down and wrote the definitive, this is what he was, and this is what he said, and this is what he stood for. So...
Just for clarification for people, basically, there was very, very little writings about Jesus during his lifetime.
Yeah.
Saul of Tarsus, who was not exactly the best of human beings,
right,
was writing a donkey and goes, yep, I see the light. I'm going to go ahead and mention some things about Jesus, but the vast majority of the story, most of the stories that people even know, wasn't until John,
right,
which is anywhere from 150 to 200 years ago, which is like me going, I got this shit about Benjamin Franklin no one knows about.
Yeah.
I don't even have the citations, but this motherfucker said this. It's going to change your world.
Josephus made, I think, if I recall, one mention, and he didn't use him. He didn't say his name. He just said that there's this guy, and he said some crazy stuff, and he may have been some kind of holy man, but I'm not sure. I'm not taking a stand. Well, that's nothing that you can't even, that could have been anybody. That may have been talking about Jesus or Bill, you know. There's no way of
or
knowing.
Ted.
Yeah, the renowned time travelers. So if we set aside all the text message, and we just stick with we cherry pick, you have to cherry pick in order for this to work. So if you cherry pick the part of the philosophy that fits the part of philosophy that you're comfortable with, then you can come up with a really good religion.
If you're a good person.
So,
sorry, I had to say that though, but like,
if you're a good person, yes, then, but if you're a bad person, then you become the Pope.
Yeah.
And then you convince people that it's okay to fuck kids. Like, why keep the religion? That's like me going, I'm a minarchist because I believe that the state, this one part of the Constitution is pretty good. If I cherry pick this just right, I get to keep the state and I get to keep hope and happiness. And I don't have to think that the world is meaningless and that no one can control me in order to have a better life.
Right. I also believe in markets, though.
This was an interrogation.
No, this is fun.
He's
no,
fun. He's yeah, fun. I'm sensing the fun here. I think we're good. I just want to know. I get very excited.
So I also believe in markets. I believe in market powers.
Yeah.
And I believe that markets figure things out. If anything, I almost put. And I don't. I say this sort of a tongue in cheek, but if anything, I almost put deistic capabilities in the market, because eventually all things with flaws get worked out, and all things that are good stay in and get reproduced over and over. It's kind of like genetics is kind of like this. The things with flaws eventually work themselves to a point of extinction, and they're out of the pool. And the things that work. Stay in the pool and keep replicating themselves. So if you look at like how old is humankind? Where do you draw that line and say, okay, this is where Australopithecus invented a rock hammer. He's no longer a monkey. Now he's Australopithecus, and he is the great, 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 great ancestor of everything that's going to come after that. So what are we like 150, 200,000 years ago? And if you think of Catholicism, it is a tiny wink of time. It is a genetic, it's not really genetic. I'm using that as an example, but it is a genetic flaw that will eventually drive itself to extinction. It is the one panda that can only digest bamboo shoots and will eventually not find bamboo shoots.
Amen.
So, and if we take that with each thing, let's imagine the state.
By the way, the name of the show has to be The Catholic Church is the Panda of Religion. Like
that's but if we think of the state the same way, the state is this weird anomaly that appeared out of a flaw in humanity. Something weird happened, and I believe that was specifically around the harvesting of grain. Because of that, that allowed taxation. It allowed robbers to stay in one place. It allowed robbers to take part of what they were stealing, but leave the farmers enough to live, which meant the farmers, it was better to accept the robbers than fight them and risk dying. So this weird anomaly took place in humanity about 10, 15,000 years ago. And if you look at it in the whole scope of things, at some point in time, the market is going to kill that thing because it is self-destructive. It's a self-destructive aspect of the species. So it's going to eventually take itself. Now, I like to believe that humanity will reach a point of where it will reject the state before the state does what is obvious that it's going to do, which is blow everything up in a giant nuclear holocaust. So hopefully enough humans will go, you know, the state, that it's a product I don't want to buy, and they will stop buying it. And I think the vast majority of religion it fits into that same category, whether again, I'm picking on individuals, but whether, you know, it's your religion that you're all going to go to Utah and you're going to wear magic underwear and you're going to do these fantastical things. And this is going to, you know, or whether you think there's 144,000 world, where the only 144,000 are going to be saved. We're going to go to heaven. Everybody else is going to cease to exist. And what do you do when your group has more than 144,000? Then you're like, we're just going to play with the numbers. And, you know, or whether you think like, okay, you believe this Bible, this King James Bible, it was written and you believe it word for word, and you take every single word exactly as it was written, like the Baptists that my family comes from. All right. And you believe that if you drink alcohol, you're going to hell. And you still believe the King James version of the Bible word for word. Do you believe that the guy whose first miracle was to create wine from water, that guy's going to send you to hell for drinking wine?
And according to the Catholic Church, his blood is made out of alcohol.
Yeah.
So he's just a fucking complete alcoholic.
So at some point, these ideas are like the 57 Edsel. Somebody has to go, that thing is crap and I don't want it. You know, it's a 72 Pinto. Somebody at some point in time has to say, it's all well and fine until somebody bumps the gas cap. And then the whole thing goes up in flames. I've dealt with Christians a lot, especially back when I was anonymous on the internet. You know, you could start talking to Christians who are really hardcore Christians and talking to them specifically about the concept of heaven and hell. And you start to go back in and you start to I've spent endless hours with Hebrew translations and dictionaries and stuff. And I start going through and saying, okay, show me in the Bible where it actually, not the New Testament, in the Old Testament, where it tells me that there's a hell and a heaven. And these people start to panic because they can't. It's simply not there. Because in the time frame when Jesus was walking around, assuming that the whole story is correct, when Jesus was walking around, there were no Jews that believed in heaven and hell. That was an entirely pagan set of thoughts. So now when you start to bring that to a Christian and you start to show them the hard documents that there's no reason within the realm of, you know, the Old Testament to accept the idea of a heaven and hell. Now, all of a sudden, well, then what is all this punishment from God? Why is he saying, you know, in the Old Testament, there were situations where, like, God would tell them, okay, go to that little city state over there and attack it and kill everybody in it, including their sheep and their cattle and their goats. Kill everything. Gold, silver you find, burn it. Burn everything they have. What? Now, how do you do that in a construct of having heaven and hell? How do you do that and justify not going to hell? I mean, how is that any different than anything Hitler ever did, or Stalin or Mao? You know, how do you? And so I don't know where I was going with that, but
I think you're going atheist. I think that's what's happening there.
I guess it goes back to just and so why am I what I am? Well, because I do have hope. I hope that there's some meaning behind this. I have no hope that I could ever possibly figure it out, because, you know, you think of the smartest minds in the world that we know of, like currently, like what's the wheelchair dude?
Stephen Hawking,
brilliant man. And he didn't have it figured out. So what hope have I? And you know, and then he says things like, well, you know, he's I mean, he's pretty much got to be an atheist, right? Has he made a stand on that?
Yeah, he's an atheist, I'm pretty sure.
But then he'll say something like, when he looks, you know, into the universe, he's looking at the face of God. And
he clarified it.
Go ahead.
He clarified it, and he said he used the word God and awe as completely interchangeable.
Yeah.
Which just makes me want to mute his little voice box button and go, use the right words, bitch. But
I do this. I like to use words in order to out of their actual meaning. I do this with the definition of state and government all the time, because it's angered people. I do this with the word anarchist too. I'll just make up a definition for anarchist and insist that that's what it is.
Well,
and then
clarify, we're good.
Yeah. And then watch people's minds freak out, you know, because what I'm really trying to get them to do is think outside of what they've been taught and outside of what they've already decided is truth, and try to get them to go beyond that, you know.
Yeah. So who are your favorite philosophers and philosophies outside of Quakerism and libertarianism?
There is a couple of Quakers that I like and should probably mention. George Fox said some really interesting things. And again, we have the problem that he wasn't writing stuff down. So it's like 2 to 3 generations afterwards that we actually have his quotes. And there's another guy whose name slips my mind at the moment, but he was a contemporary of Fox. And he at one time decided that he just really wanted to piss off the authorities in a way that no Quaker had ever done. So a lot of Quakers back in the 1600s were natural hair proponents. They didn't believe that you should shone or shave. That was their terminology.
And you obviously took that literally.
Yeah, I like that. So, George Fox was not like that. George Fox shaved. But this other guy that I can't remember his name, he went full natural with his hair.
Yeah.
And he was also relatively tall and relatively thin. And so people said that he kind of looked like the images of Jesus. So one day he decided to just really play this out. And so on Palm Sunday, the day supposedly that Jesus came into Jerusalem riding on a donkey with his followers throwing palm leaves in front of the donkey's feet, this guy goes into London in the 1600s like that, with his followers throwing palm leaves. Now, I don't know where they got palm leaves in the 1600s in England, but, you know, whatever. But he rides into London on a donkey like this, and then does a mock crucifixion of himself. And the whole purpose was kind of to mock the predominant,
you know,
authority.
I did the exact same thing at a fetish ball in San Antonio, Texas. I walked down the Riverwalk with a crucifix right behind me while a girl dressed up as a sexy Roman soldier was whipping me. But, you know, that's a different kind of thing, though. I think we were different names.
Maybe not.
Maybe similar.
But anyway, he got himself imprisoned for this. he got himself imprisoned for this and was beaten pretty severely. And they used a hot brad to pierce his tongue with as his punishment, so that he couldn't preach, you know. And after that, it pretty much broke his spirit. And he had one thing. His writings were actually contemporary, because he actually wrote things. He wrote pamphlets. He was a pamphleteer. So his writings are pretty cool, and I wish I could remember his name. I'm stalling. But anyway, his final speech before he died was very inspirational. Other than that, to go back to the main question, I like to read. I hate to sound this way, because this sounds really shallow, but I like to read specific quotes from Kierkegaard or from Nietzsche or from some of these other guys. Even like
specific quotes from Nietzsche is way better than just trying to read it.
Yeah.
Syphilis infused cynicism, cutting yourself, 13-year-old girls, half of it. Oh.
Yeah, that's what I'm like that with Mises too. Yeah. I sit down and start reading Mises, and I just want to I want to like pluck my eyes out, because
Human
it's so
Action,
boring.
He could have written it in 100 pages.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, social. Oh, yeah. There's great quotes. No. Here, this is what you do. You just read whatever Jeffrey Tucker quoted Mises saying, and it's generally pretty good.
Yeah.
He finds all the good stuff.
Yeah.
He's like, did you read about the part about feminism in the socialism book? I was like, no, I didn't, but I know you did. Now you're going to tell me
about
it.
It.
And I'm excited. So I'm good to go.
So Jeffrey Tucker recaps are great.
Yeah, great.
So that's where I am with philosophy. I pick out stuff. You know, there are Augustine. There's some really good Augustine quotes. There's, you know, I hate to say it, but there's even a, among the so-called founding fathers, there's some really good zingers that, that they say. And then 99% of what they say is wrong because half of them owned slaves and the other half, you know, adored the ownership of slaves. They just couldn't afford it, you know. So,
so you know, this is interesting, though, because it actually speaks to me and Megan just did this feminism episode, which is I can't wait to do like a recap show or just kind of go into all the shit that happened from it. But there's a point that we were trying to bring up, which was the idea that, yes, a lot of these early feminists had these problems, but you don't. The thing with us, though, is that we don't say that they were divinely inspired.
Right.
We just go, hey, there's some pretty good quotes out of here. Margaret Sanger, yeah, kind of a eugenicist. She wasn't exactly the best person. But you can learn some things from there. I think the biggest split here is just that I'm going, well, definitely wasn't divinely inspired, and there's so much nutty stuff in there. You go, well, Jesus, still cool enough. To where I'm like, okay, maybe that was God. Mm. But this is by far and away the I was not expecting this when I brought up the Christianity thing, and this is the you're a very hedonistic Christian, basically. Like you pick what you choose, and if you don't like it, you're like, eh, fuck it.
Market Christian.
Market Christian.
I want to mention one other thing, that because I've been specifically and I believe intentionally misquoted by someone who really makes an effort to paint themselves as an atheist. What? No? Huh? What? I did an explanation of my beliefs of prophecy. What is prophecy? And I think, and I've said this several times, actually in public speaking as well, that I think prophecy is one of two things. Let's say three. One of three things. Prophecy is one of three things historically. It's either an outright con job by a con person, you know, a con man, or a you know, soothsayer or whatever, and it's just for the purpose of making money. Two, it is the psychotic babblings of a nutcase. Or three, it's a person who has sat down and cleared their mind and thought, if A is like A, and if B is like B, and if C is like C, what is D gonna be like? And they just really clarify their thoughts and think ahead. And my example was, you know, imagine it's like 13,000 BC and you're sitting there on a bank of a river and you're watching the birth of the city state and you think this thing could get really, really ugly. If it really catches on, this could be like fire from the sky type scary. And now you don't have the knowledge to understand nuclear holocaust. You don't have the understanding of gunpowder. You don't have the understanding of castle walls or any of the horrendous things or mass murder. You don't have the knowledge to estimate that. But you know that if this thing you're seeing catches on, it's going to be horrible. But if I come right out and say it, they're going to cook me. They're going to barbecue me tomorrow and feed me to their dogs. So I have to say it like, oh, you know what? God told me. And what can you do about it? You can't kill me because they all think I'm some kind of holy man. And so you have to tolerate it. So I think a good portion of what is considered prophecy, when it actually comes true, you know, now a lot of it, like if you read Nostradamus, it's, yeah, it could be anything. It could be,
there's going to be another war.
Yeah.
Wow. Good
and the,
for you.
The city
technology's going to get better. Someone's going to die who's important.
And the ground will shake.
Oh.
But you know, I think the point of my Bad Quaker podcast was to get to the point of where I could say, so yeah, so here's my prophecy. Here's what's going to happen if these things take place. And my point in that was, it's not divinely inspired. It's inspired by my garden and the sun and bourbon. And this is my prophecy. This is what I think is going to happen. And you have two roads to go down. And that is either the state is going to take us to species-wide extinction, and it's probably going to end this planet in a fireball, or people are going to come to a point of where a market for freedom overcomes the market for a government, and we will, as a species, reject it. And if that means, you know, upheaval, I don't know. There's no way of knowing. If it means a peaceful rejection of government, that could be too. I know that the people in control are not going to peaceably let go. They are going to struggle with everything they have to keep control. And I don't have the answers as to how that is. But so my prophecy from my garden, the sun, and bourbon is that it'll go one of two ways. It's going to look really, really bad and end humanity, or it's going to end the government worldwide, not one government. You know, it's not a one country type thing. We're either going to reject the state as a whole, or it's going to kill us. And then, you know, I was misquoted as saying that I have divine power and prophecy and everything. It's like, yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, okay, we'll believe that.
Well, my best prophecies are fueled by bourbon. So, well, Ben, thanks so much for sitting down with us. I really appreciate it. And
hey, it's been nice.
I always have such a good time on The Fiends with you, and I like to have a kind of different conversation too. So I really appreciate it. Thank you, Carlos. And yeah, I guess until
bourbon time.
Yes. I've tried to know which words to sing so many times. And I've tried to know which chord to play, and I've tried to make it rhyme. And I've tried to find the key that all good songs are in. And I've tried to find the notes to make that great resounding din. But there's a bad man in everyone, no matter who we are. There's a rapist and a Nazi living in our tiny hearts. Child pornographers and cannibals and politicians too. There's someone in your head waiting to fucking strangle you. So here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. People love you more. Oh, never mind. Oh, never mind. In fucking fact, Mrs. Robinson, the world won't care whether you live or die. You live or die. In fucking fact, Mrs. Robinson, they probably hate to see your stupid face. Your stupid face. So here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. You live in an unforgiving place.